Reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, and we'll cover texts 12 and 13. In these verses that we read yesterday, text 10 and 11, this, as I mentioned, it includes one of the six questions that are found in this first chapter that make up the basis of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. The answers are found in chapters 2 and 3, but the rest of the Bhagavatam is expanding those answers. So these questions are very... These are good questions. Essence questions. Text 9, for those of you who are note takers, text 9 expresses the first question. The first question is, what's the ultimate and absolute good for all people? That's a good question. Ultimate and absolute good for all people. And then text 11 is, what's the essence of all the revealed scriptures? And the answer to both of those questions is found in 1, 2, 6, and 7, second chapter, text 6 and 7. And then all the way through text 17, this second question, the essence of all the scriptures is devotional service, pure devotional service. And how that pure devotional service is to be rendered is presented in those series of verses from text 8 through text 17, you know, the sequence of the unfolding of bhakti, step by step. Now in text 12, we have another question, so the third question. The third question is, why did Krishna appear? Only, instead of presenting it as a question, they make it as a statement. The statement is, Sutta, you know why Krishna appeared. And we want to know what you know. Sutta janasi badram te bhagavan satvatam patihi devakyam vasudevasya jatoyasya chikirshaya. All blessings upon you, O Sutta Goswami. You know for what purpose the personality of God had appeared in the womb of Devaki as the son of Vasudev. Well, you can imagine that since these are essence verses where questions are presented, our commentators have said a lot about it. And what Prabhupada has done in his purport is just given us like a little capsule of that. But this, does it seem a little strange that the audience is giving blessings to the speaker? That's the point that's commented by our acharyas. Sutta Janasi Bhadram Te, all blessings upon you. Prabhupada explains that in the purport. The implication is they recognized that Sutta had already received blessings, and because of those blessings they want to, it enhances their eagerness to hear. It's not they're giving blessings. They're sages also, but they recognize that amongst them Sutta is especially blessed because he not only has knowledge but direct realization. He heard from Shukadeva Goswami and he understood everything that Shukadeva Goswami said, and he has assimilated everything that Shukadeva Goswami has said. He's like a Kamadenu. You know what a Kamadenu is? You know what a Kamadenu is? Girls over there. Kamadenu. Surabhi. What is a Surabhi? Got panicked over there. Kamadenu is a spiritual wish-fulfilling cow. A cow that gives unlimited milk. In fact, can fulfill all desires. Anyway, they see Sutta Goswami as like that, and they're very eager to hear. Bhadram Te, or blessings upon you, quote unquote, indicates the sage's anxiety to know the absolute truth from the speaker. Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared to Devaki, the wife of Vasudev. Vasudev is the symbol of the transcendental position wherein the appearance of the Supreme Lord takes place. So, a little bit on that one. There's Vasudev and there's Vasudev. Which one is the father? Which one is the son? Vasudev and Vasudev. A little louder. Okay. The father's name is Vasudev and Krishna's name is Vasudev. The son has this long A over his, over the first vowel, Vasudev, Vasudev. So, like as Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Vasudeva Sarva Mitisa Mahatma Sadurlaba. Who knows that verse? Bhunam Jamanamante Gyanavan Mam Bhupadite Vasudev Sarva Miti Samahatma Sadurlaba. Good. So, Vasudev Sarvamiti. Vasudev is everything. There's a nice verse where Vasudev Param Jnanam Vasudeva Para Tapaha, and so on. Vasudev is everything. Something that you consider to be wonderful, that essence of that wonderfulness is Vasudev. Krishna is everything. He's so wonderful that even he's the source of everything, he appears as the sun. So, Vasudev, the father, is very special. He's the place of the appearance of Krishna. First he appeared in the mind of Krishna, of Vasudev. And then, very generously, Vasudev transferred Krishna into the mind of Devaki. Prabhupada writes about that in the Bhagavatam. That's like initiation, where the spiritual capacity of the preceptor is then passed on to the shishya as a gift. And that leads us into this other phrase in the verse, Sutta Janasi Bhadram Te Bhagavan Satvatam Patihi. Satvatam Patihi. What does sat mean? Please, someone volunteer. What does sat mean?
Eternal.
Okay. That which is of the absolute realm, eternal. Everything in the spiritual realm is eternal. So, sattvatam, is a sattvata as one who is situated in that, the eternal. And Krishna is sattvatam patihi, Bhagavan is sattvatam patihi. Here's what Prabhupada writes. So this is explaining the phrase Bhagavan Satvatam Patihi. Bhagavan means the Almighty God, who is the controller of all opulence, power, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. He is the protector of his devotees. Bhagavan Satvatam Patihi. Although God is equally disposed to everyone, he is especially inclined to his devotees. Sat means absolute truth. Eternal is also eternal existence. Or if you say sat chit ananda, existence, knowledge, and bliss. So, the absolute truth of the absolute nature. And persons who are servitors of Sat, or the Absolute Truth, are called Sattvatas. And the personality of Godhead, who protects such pure devotees, as is known as Sattvatam Patihi. So, here's what our Acharyas explain about this, Sattvatam Patihi. Very important. It directly has to do with the position of Sutta Goswami, or directly has to do with the position of a preceptor. And that is, they're sattvatas, and the sattvatas are protected by Sattvatam Patihi, and that which the sattvatam personalities can give, they can give Krishna. And by giving Krishna, they're giving Krishna's protection. So when we think of protection, sometimes, often, commonly, we'll think of something outside, like, you know, a hurtful person may come and attack and, you know, physically beat up or something. So, you know, that's one kind of protection. But as far as the soul is concerned, soul doesn't need that kind of protection because you can't harm the soul. Isn't it? Like Socrates. He was told, you better comply with the king or he'll punish you. And then Socrates' reply is, first he'll have to catch me. Like, you know, this is me, the soul, because he was identifying on the platform of the soul. Or Haridas Thakur, when he was told by the Qazi, you must give up this practice of calling upon the Hindu god's name, or we'll have to punish you. And Haridas Thakur said, you're the representative of the king, it's the king's duty. You have the right and you have the authority. You can punish me as you wish. But if your punishment is that you cut this body into a million little pieces, I still will not be able to give up chanting Krishna's holy name. Because chanting for Haridas Thakur comes from the soul. the body is an instrument that makes sounds and so forth, but the chanting is an act of the soul. So a sattvata is on the platform of the soul, and the sattvata is protected by Krishna. So the sattvata, extending Krishna's protection to others, will give the protection in the form of something that's more internal, something that's even more dear to the soul. That is, what causes our implication in material existence? It's our material desire. When the soul, listen carefully, when the soul desires to enjoy separate from Krishna, that causes all of our problems. It's the fundamental root of problems. And so a sattvata extends Krishna's protection by placing desire for Krishna instead of the other desires, the other shelters. That's what giving Krishna means. It's like Prabhupada's example. If a child is holding on to something, and that something that's in their hand is detrimental, is hurtful, try to take that something from the child's hand. What happens? Scream bloody murder. Even it's hurtful. So, alternatively, here's something that's more attractive. And if that the child can see that more, like a little glittery something, and they'll drop that other something and reach for the glittery something. So the hurtful thing is released so that the other thing can be accepted. But you have to let go of material desire, taking shelter in finding happiness, means of satisfaction, purposefulness of life and values and so on, in temporary illusory things. If one cannot let go of that, how can one take shelter of Krishna? We were speaking yesterday about coming to a spiritual conception. I'm speaking on that same point again. I'm like putting a flag on it and saying, pay attention over here. This is spiritual conception program. And with it comes protection. And that's what a Sutta Goswami personality can do. Therefore, Bhadram Te, all blessings unto you or upon you. Because he's received Krishna's blessings, and by receiving Krishna's blessings, his material desire is gone. There's no other shelter. There's no other aspiration. Whatever is done in this world, because we do things in this world, it's otherworldly, because it's just for Krishna's happiness. And that was the, if you recall from yesterday morning's class, there was this phrase, yenat masu prasidati. Who is there in existence, even a fly or a mosquito or, you know, any living entity, a bug, a germ. You know, happiness is something every living entity wants. He's having drum practice over here. Happiness is something every living entity wants. And the sattvatas want to give it, you know, the real deal, the real thing. But to give the real thing, this hurtful thing that one is holding on to has to be released. And try to take that hurtful thing from a small child and they'll scream bloody murder. Or from a big child called an adult that doesn't understand something may be detrimental to my ultimate welfare. And you try to, you know, like, please let go of that hurtful thing. Okay. it really requires a Sutta Goswami personality, or one who is simply serving a Sutta Goswami personality, as Sutta Goswami is simply serving Shukadeva Goswami, and so forth, where the replacing the material conception with the spiritual conception is the mission, so that one can receive the best of all things. You know, our rejoining Krishna in the spiritual world, where, you know, all problems are over. All problems. Not only, you know, there's no taxes there, etc. You know, but the pains and pleasures of the material world are absent. All of the unpleasantries of material existence are gone. You know, hurtful ways that people deal with one another, and so on and so on. It's gone. But we have to let go. Small thing, let go. Oh, if I let go, then what will I have? It's so dear to me. And so we remain in the sojourn of birth and death. But the well-wishing personalities wish no longer birth and death for the objects of their affection. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes this Satvatam Patihi phrase is the same as another way of saying Krishna's quality of being Bhaktavatsala. Bhaktavatsala. What does Bhaktavatsala mean? Do you know? Okay, you won't forget after this morning. Bhaktavatsala, do you know? So it's a quality of Krishna. Krishna is very kind upon his devotees. Bhakta part, you know, his devotee. Bhaktavatsala is a name for Krishna, describing a quality of Krishna, that he is very kind upon his devotee. He has special affection for his devotee. Now let's think about Krishna being neutral. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvesho stina priyaha. He's equal to everyone. No one is my friend, no one is my enemy. Dvesha. He doesn't have any ill feeling towards anybody. Nor priya. Like, you know, he's my favorite or she's my favorite and the others can go rot somewhere. I just like this one or that one. Krishna is not like that. Krishna is equal to all. Now let's go the other side again. But one who approaches Krishna with very much affection and love and shelter-taking mood, Krishna reciprocates. Like Prabhupada gives two examples. Here comes Kamsa. I want to kill Krishna, okay? It's like Krishna doesn't get mad at Kamsa. Krishna's just reciprocating. Oh, you'd like to approach me in that way. Very well, I'll reciprocate. If you want to see me as enemy, I'll be your enemy. That's okay. If you want to see me as your friend, I'll be your friend. That's okay. But towards the friend, he's friend. When Kamsa was sitting up on this raised seat, and Krishna and Balaram had killed Chanura and Mushtika, and they had two other brothers, and they finished the two other brothers. Sukadeva Goswami says Krishna was looking at Kamsa out of the corner of his eye, like a young boy looks lustfully upon a young girl. He was thinking, I want to finish him. So he jumped up and grabbed Kamsa and grabbed him by the hair and threw him on the wrestling mat and started punching him. Finished him. Kamsa was screaming. This is Kamsa, you know, wicked Kamsa that had beat up on everybody else, and here's Krishna. Sako. 12-year-old boy. Finished. And people couldn't believe it. That just this 12-year-old boy just pulverized wicked Kamsa, who they were so afraid of. Terrorized everybody. Like, you know, the chief of the terrorists, that guy in wherever he is. So this finished. So that Krishna wanted to show he was dead, so he grabbed him by the hair and dragged him slowly around the wrestling arena so everyone could see he's not just like unconscious, he's gone. And everyone was cheering. The wicked Kamsa is dead. So that's Krishna's protection to his devotee. He protects the devotee not just from the Kamsa-like personalities outside, but the Kamsa-like desires inside. That's protection. That's protection. There's idea of, you know, parents are to protect their children, or husbands are to protect their wives, or teachers are to protect their students, or the government leaders are to protect their citizens. It doesn't just mean, you know, from invasion from, you know, you put good strong locks on the door or something like that. Or you get your missile system so you can defend against other people that have missiles. It's far more significant that it's the impurities of the heart. That's protection. And to get that protection in place, there has to be spiritual conception of who we are, what real happiness is, and what false shelters are. And we're going to hear an expanded version of this in the second canto, so many false shelters, fallible soldiers, Prabhupada calls them. And our life is filled with such things, material life. And, you know, there's this tendency to try to, like, you know, fuse the two together, our material life and spiritual life, and become, you know, judge our well-being of spiritualness, spiritual well-being in terms of our material prosperity. It's not the message of the Bhagavatam. It's not the message of the Bhagavatam. When there's spiritual well-being, material well-being follows like a shadow, but the material well-being shape is not what the material well-being of a materialist looks like. The material well-being of a spiritualist is exactly what Krishna describes. That is, whatever we require, he provides. And whatever we have, he preserves. Yoga kshema bahamyam. That's our well-being. And it's not like this verse that we read yesterday morning, where the materialist, not having that shelter, is thinking prosperity in terms of so many things that are useless. You got to have them to be, you know, in a place of well-being. Not so. Not so at all. Where has that brought our Western civilization? To a position of well-being because people have material prosperity? And what is that material prosperity? In a flash, it's gone and everyone's crying. And what about character? You know, values. All these paradoxes, bigger houses and smaller families. And so on and so on. More gadgets and less time. And so on and so on. So many paradoxes. It's not what it appears to be. It's Maya. And we're embracing Maya, saying, you know, I want my spirituality and embracing my illusion also. You have to let go of that hurtful material conception to receive the spiritual conception. And Bhadramte, the sages, they're eager. Sutta, you're blessed. All blessings upon you. Please deliver this valuable. They have let go of the material conception. That's how one can receive descending mercy. That's how the spiritual conception can enter. Just like this example I gave you yesterday about chanting. Bhaktisiddhanta description. You can teach a parrot to chant. You can make a machine that chants. We can be mechanical chanters too. There's some submission to even to be a mechanical chanter. Okay, that's good. Krishna accepts that. But to receive the fullness of what chanting of the holy name is, there has to be willingness to receive it, an openness of heart. And that, you know, the mechanical approach, you know, I would say, out of all the questions that I, as a traveling sannyasi receive, there's some of them that like hit the top five of the hit parade. And one of those is, Maharaj, when will that day come when my chanting will go beyond this mechanical phase? When will I, or another version of the same is, what is necessary, or when will it come that I'll actually feel, like have real, deep, genuine spiritual feelings when taking up this? I experience certainly some benefit, relief and clarity, but genuinely deep spiritual feeling. When will that come? What is needed for that to happen? Another way of saying, you know, how do we go beyond mechanical chanting or mechanical devotional service or mechanical life and into a deep, genuine devotional experience of life? Krishna is eager to give that experience. On Krishna's side, the problem isn't over there. The problem is over here. And the eagerness, again repeating from yesterday, the need, or in Sanskrit, sankalpa, what is the intention that you have when you chant? What is it that you want? Your expectation. And generally, if it's mechanical chanting, then it's mixed. It's not only this on this end of the spectrum or only that on the other end of the spectrum. It's a mix. And the attempt of those who are guiding one in spiritual life is to go to the unmixed, because that's the position of yenatma supraseedati. And it's the message of the Bhagavatam to take us there also, because as you know, Vyasadeva supplied all the mixed stuff and he was not satisfied. His spiritual master, Narada, said, if you're not satisfied, how are your readers going to be satisfied? Because mix is not going to bring satisfaction. You need the unmixed. And let that be your message. So, certainly patience is required on the part of the teacher to bring the student to the unmixed. And patience is needed on the side of the student to come to the unmixed. But the goal should be unmixed. And it should be a clear spiritual conception. In other words, I'm not going to let go of this thing that I'm holding on to unless I understand what that thing is. There's a nice story. This is a generic story. Once upon a time, there was a student. And he had a spiritual master. And the student said to the spiritual master, after some time of serving the spiritual master, "I'd like the most valuable thing. Can you give me the most confidential, valuable teaching?" So he gave him the holy name. And he went home chanting the holy name, thinking, "Oh, how fortunate, my spiritual master has given me the most valuable thing." As he was walking home, feeling so happy, he saw a washerman who was washing his clothes. And the washerman was singing the holy name. And he thought, "Boy, the most valuable thing, but here's a washerman singing the holy name." And then continuing on further, there was another, I forget what the other one was, another common laborer, and then a group of boys that were playing, and they were singing the holy name. And he was, as we say in ISKCON, fried. What's going on? He said it was the most confidential thing. So he went back the next day to his spiritual master and said, I can't understand. I asked you, you gave the most, I believe you, but how is it that these common people, washermen, children playing, and someone else, the third one was a lady doing something. So he said, his reply was, "Here's a touchstone. Take this touchstone. Don't tell the people who it is, but go to each of those people and ask them, would you like to purchase this touchstone for a fair price? And see what the response is." And one by one, each of them, the third one was a fisherman. So the washerman saw no use for a touchstone. I can't take the clothes and slap the clothes on the big flat. I need a big flat stone. This I can't. No, thank you. No, thank you. And the fisherman, it's useless. I can, maybe tie it on part of my net so it will sink to the bottom, but, I need a bigger stone than that one. No, thank you. And the kids, I can't kick it. I can't hit it. I can't play ball with it. So what's the use? So we went back to a spiritual master and the next day and said, "Now do you understand? If you don't understand what the worth of something is, although it may be the most precious thing, if you don't understand what it is, you're not willing to receive it." And so, in explaining what is the most valuable, precious thing, that's what spiritual training and education, giving the spiritual conception in place of the material conception, the false shelters of life. Try it sometime. Meet somebody that wants to learn about spiritual life and see how willing and ready they are to let go of their material shelters. Hey, they're not. Or at best it's gradual. But what you would like is to offer them the real thing. Of course, to offer them the real thing, you have to have received the real thing. Therefore, Prabhupada explained, when you go to the marketplace, there are very few diamond shops. And generally, they cluster them together. But, go to Chinatown in New York City and, how many places are selling cut glass and how many places are selling diamonds? Because there are not too many people willing to pay the price for diamonds. And to pay the price is to receive. You can't hold something else in your hand and in the same hand receive something additional. It doesn't work. And therefore progress is very slow. So the qualification of the sages is mentioned by this Bhadramte, their eagerness to receive. And their relationship with one who has the capacity to give is that that person is Satvatam Patihi, Bhagavan Satvatam Patihi. He's under the protection and can offer protection. Not like, you know, you've got big biceps, but can relieve one's heart from material desires. That's real protection. Then text 13. Oh, Sutta Goswami, we are eager to learn about the personality of Godhead and his incarnations. That sounds like another one of the questions that's going to be rephrased in just a few verses, but it's like a prelude, a hint. Please describe the incarnation, the forms of the Lord as they appear in this world. That's how it's stated. Here it's, we are eager to learn about the personality of Godhead and his incarnations. And then the hint of the next one is also there in the same verse. Please explain to us those teachings imparted by the previous acharyas, for one is uplifted both by speaking them and by hearing them. So there's another very important message of transcendental life, and that is the role doesn't matter. Sukadeva Goswami speaking, Maharaj Pariksit is listening. They both go back to Godhead. You know, Hari Bol. So, you know, take turns. But Sukadeva Goswami is the speaker and Maharaj Pariksit is the receiver. Perfection is in either case. Both receive equal benefit. Because the goal is pleasing Krishna. Quickly, the purport will end. The conditions for hearing the transcendental message of the Absolute Truth are set forth herein. The first condition is that the audience must be very sincere and eager to hear. And the speaker must be in the line of disciplic succession from the recognized acharya. The transcendental message of the Absolute is not understandable by those who are materially absorbed. Under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, one becomes gradually purified. Therefore, and I was going to say it again, one must be in the chain of disciplic succession and learn the spiritual art of submissive hearing. So then he concludes by saying, all these conditions are met, the sages are this, the sutta is that, and the message is pure, and they're eager to receive, and so the whole thing is consummated. It becomes effective. And that's what we'd like, not the mechanical kind, but the effective kind. Such discourses help all men on the path of spiritual realization. Okay, so we've got 4 questions out of 6. We're doing very, very well. Any comments or questions on this morning's class? Nilesh.
Thinking of material conceptions, is this our endeavor, or is it like both mercy and like when we put effort to give up that conceptions, then we receive the mercy, or we need mercy even to like give up conceptions, material conceptions?
It's not one or the other, it's both. Supposing it's one or supposing it's the other, it's not effective. Both. It can be shining outside and one can be hiding under a rock and it's all dark. or it can be, you know, the dead of night and one's running around looking for the light of the sun. Both need to be there. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, Maharaj, it's actually along the same lines I have been thinking about this. These material conceptions have been ingrained for quite a very, very long time. And so what happens in the material life is, like, unless otherwise, I mean, they have been trained like that, unless otherwise we get a foothold, you know, we don't leave what we are holding on to. But here, like, the knowledge is there because of the mercy of my superiors, the knowledge is there. But still, I'm not able to leave them, actually. I mean, I'm able to feel that is really causing more pain, actually, when that shake is there, and I'm not letting go of them. It's causing more pain. But still, I'm not knowing, actually.
What was the conclusion?
Yeah, like...
But, no, I got the message. Just restate the punchline.
Yeah, I'm just... my question is actually, is it like as fate develops gradually?
Yes. That was how I was going to respond. It's gradual. It's gradual only because we're attached. Doesn't have to be gradual. It's gradual only because we're attached. And the effect of a purifying agent would be more swift or immediate if that attachment was less. But as you've properly described, it's long attachment. It's not like recent. Not even just this lifetime, it's long, countless lifetimes of attachment. So, therefore, gradual. But that doesn't mean, okay, I'll just be very gradual. One should not be complacent. One should be, and even with that utsahan, great enthusiasm, it's still gradual. Because we're still attached. The eagerness is to receive mercy. And, having received mercy, to act in a responsible, sincere way. Those two things. Effort and mercy. And keep applying. So gradual.
And also, Maharaj, like as this uncovering, more and more reading scriptures, hearing, I'm able to feel like more and more attachments are, I'm able to see now, because all those were I was in so much ignorance, I didn't see. But now, as I see so many, like, in gross and subtle ways, so many things are there, it seems very, very painful, actually.
Painful and blissful at the same time. getting disconnected from the root of suffering, it's like medicine. And the nature of the medicine, like the classic example is jaundice, the nature of the medicine is mystery. Rock candy. It tastes bitter. Ooh. But it's not bitter at all. It's very nice. It only tastes bitter because of our disease. Our diseased condition makes that which is very nice seem... Anyway, so you be a good patient. Keep taking the medicine. And in fact, the medicine is very nice. It's not just bitter medicine, it's very nice.
said we don't understand the value of something, we cannot receive it.
Well, we're not willing to, the story is we're not willing to make a sacrifice in order to, we're not willing to let go of something in order to get that valuable something, more valuable something.
So why is that sometimes whatever we need to be giving up also seems all this false to be for this
Say it again. Why is it that?
Why is it that something I need to give up to receive this more valuable thing? I know this is more valuable, but this also seems that this is also needed.
Well, in some cases it may be, but it may not. In other cases it may not be. And if it's needed, it may be that I don't need. You know, how do I say this? Now, the necessities include we must eat and we need some rest. You know, there's necessities. But beyond necessities, you know, if one becomes more spiritually advanced, even those necessities become less. Not in some artificial way, but they become less. And taken in, besides taking, you know, a specific thing, let's say somebody Prabhupada gave the example when he was a grihastha working, a person he knew lost a court case, and with that court case he lost all of his wealth. The court penalized him, and he died within a year because he couldn't even think of living without the rich standard of living that he previously had. He lost his will to live. He died gradually. So, what is the standard of living that we require? What is it that we need? A lot of it's in the mind, for example. We need friendship. But in many cases, that which we think is friendship is, you know, just mutual back scratching. I've got some needs, you've got some needs, I'll fill your needs, you'll fill my needs, and it's not really what friendship is. Because when those needs aren't being met, there goes the friendship. Real friendship is beyond that, you know, it's a deeper need. We're social beings because in the spiritual world we're social, that's our identity. But the need of friendship is on a qualitative scale. It's not what we have in this world, although we need friendship. We're misplacing that need in something that's false because of our contamination and our ignorance. So a sense of what we need may be a false sense of what we need, when in fact there is a real sense, but we're just reposing it improperly. We need to love and be loved. Because in the spiritual world, that's what goes on eternally. But is it being reposed properly? And we're reading, well, I have this need, etc. So the attachment, quite often, is to a misconception that were the misconception to be let go of, that on the soul level need can be met. But we'll never know it as long as we're holding on to the material conception. So then back to this other, therefore it's gradual. But it's also a slippery slope. So don't trust, well, it's gradual, just kind of, this is the don't be complacent message again. Because I should continue to make progress. Prabhupada, the teaching that Prabhupada gave is that spiritual life is dynamic, not static. So one is either progressing or regressing. There's not a standstill, tread water and just like hang out for a while. We're either striving to progress or we're regressing. So one needs to continue to strive to progress toward Krishna, to receive that spiritual purity that Krishna is offering us. And this other is, it's whatever that is that I think, well, that's also a need, is not a need if it's in conflict with, it's not a need. Because in the spiritual position, there's no conflict. There may be, you know, the spiritual counterpart of that which I think is a need, that is a need. But that's not going to be in conflict with full shelter in Krishna. Was that all right? Yes.
I understand that patience is required to come to the platform for next. See, a person like
so
me.
So is enthusiasm.
So, person like me, I don't have enough patience because I would like to.
Like get there immediately. Enthusiasm is good.
How long to wait, or how do we cultivate that?
Well, the balancing component is confidence, trust in Krishna, and the process of connecting with Krishna. Bhakti is that connector. So trusting in that bhakti is a vehicle will get you to your destination. So just confidence in the process and in the goal, the sadhana and the sadhya, it energizes patience. The reality is, Krishna is the controller, not me. And if I try to assert my false position of being the controller, I'm not on the Krishna channel. I've got another channel going on. It may be sincere, but it's the wrong channel. It's being pushed by the modes, but it's not receiving Krishna's mercy and depending upon Krishna's mercy and acting within that internal potency of Krishna's mercy. So it's one way that you can become free from that is suffering. Nobody likes to suffer. But being impatient with Krishna is suffering. It's a disconnect. You know, it's like your children coming before you and say, Daddy, and stomping their foot saying, you know, now, I'm busy doing something right now, it's very important. Daddy, now. Like, you know, 5 minutes ago now. Now. Or a small child that just cries when they don't get what they want. Screams and screams. Anyway, so maturing in devotion is when there's faith in the process and faith in the object of the process, Krishna. He is loving. But Krishna also wants us to know what his position is and what our position is. We're the servant. We don't make demands of the master. We serve the master according to his indication. In his own way, in his own, you know, on his terms. That's what servants do. So if I know what is his intention, so that comes through the guidance that we receive through scripture and other forms of descending knowledge, just do that. And that's non-fruitive. Just Krishna's will should be done. Anything else? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. Maharaj, yesterday you said like that position should be reached when mind doesn't think anything outside Krishna. Mind just thinks of Krishna.
Yeah.
So how does like present we are working, we are like going around in material life, how does that position will come into
it? It comes when you become attached to Krishna. Classic example. Young boy, young girl, they become attached to each other. What happens? Constantly. They're supposed to be, you know, studying. They can't study. They're thinking of him and her. They're eating their meal. They're, you know, brushing their teeth. They're waking in the morning. They're whatever it is.
Sometimes that makes you complacent in the like work, like when you work.
Yeah. So the difference with Krishna is the conception is Krishna is everything. Each thing that I do is for Krishna. It's not like this is a distinction. It's not daydreaming. Gazing out the window and, you know, thinking of my romance, spacing out. It's very focused because each thing is for Krishna. Because Krishna is everything. Krishna is the source of everything, and therefore Krishna is everything. Each thing that I do, it's for Krishna. That's when one is attached in devotion to Krishna. That's the consequence. So you're sitting in the workplace. It's not like, oh, I don't see the relationship between this being in the workplace and Krishna. That's like, you know, that's making a mental adjustment. This is from the heart. I'm not going to sit here doing anything unless it's for Krishna. When I'm attached to Krishna, each thing, each little thing, walking out the door and heading for my car and turn on the ignition and drive down the street, and each thing that you do is for Krishna. Otherwise I don't do it. That's when there's attachment, and we're not yet attached. We're performing sadhana bhakti, regulative practice, and so we're not feeling that attachment, so the thought of Krishna is not with us at all times. When one is attached, thought of Krishna is with you at all times. When persons who are very dear to you, thought of them without effort comes into the mind. And this other stage, as we discussed yesterday, is it's spontaneous. Beyond asakti is bhava. That's the bhava stage of bhakti. And Rupa Goswami describes it. How to attain it, what it looks like, what it feels like. Okay. Thank you. very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.